Schöpfer schreibe, gute Welt. Viele Tropfen, die wir haben, scheinen viel mehr. Namaste, Sarsati Deve, Gaudavani Pacharne, Sir Vishesha Shunyavadi, Master Vishesha Tara. So we've been discussing Purushottam Yoga, the yoga of Purushottam, the Supreme Personality of God. We discussed the upside down tree. We discussed the need to cut oneself off from that tree by which way?
Detachment.
And we talked about the destination to which one should go and never return. Now we're on text 7. Do you have that water for me, Kabir? That water?
The bottle.
Oh, bottle is there. Okay. Hidden from view. Thank you. Mami Mamsho Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana Mana Shastan Indriyani Prakriti Sthani Karsha. Very important verse about the constitution of the living being. He's Ansha. Ansha means? Part. How long is he part?
Eternal.
Eternal, sanatana. Mami vamsha jiva loke. Jiva bhuta sanatana. But prakriti sthani karshati, being situated in the prakriti, the material nature, he's struggling, karshati, with manashasthani, indriyani, the six senses, and the including the mind. It's not that he assumes individuality in his conditional life and in his liberated state becomes one with the Supreme Lord. He's eternally apart, Amsha. Are there any questions about this? Are there any questions? Say again. What about Prakriti Sthani Karshati? If it's a divine arrangement? If it's a government arrangement for you to go to prison, why do you have a hard time there? Isn't it? Krishna's government, he arranges that you have to take this body. And what do you expect? If you act like a criminal, you get treated like a criminal. That's surprising. Why little old me? You know, like I said about Al Capone, the gangster. So I was trying to give the people of Chicago a good time. You know, selling illegal liquor and prostitute rings and so on. I'm just trying to give the people of Chicago a good time. So, you know, why little old me? Why should I have to suffer? I wasn't doing nothing. But the real story is that we're trying to exploit the resources of the material world. We're trying to act in an unconstitutional position. and therefore we bring suffering upon ourselves. Can you bring that pillow again, that little pillow? Okay. So we won't spend a lot of time on this verse, but it's a very important verse. Shrotram cha chusparshanam cha rasanam kranam eva cha adhishtaya manaschayam vishayanu pasevate.
Skip one.
Did I? No, I did. Sriram yadavapnoti yatschapyukramatishadaha Vipaitani sangyati vayur gantan vivashayat. You remember we discussed this verse a few days back? You do all remember that, right? It stands out vividly in your mind.
Yeah.
We had all that interactive learning and learning experiences. You do remember. Okay, good. Shriram yadavapnoti. He gets a particular body and gives it up. Grihitvaitani sanyati. Like the air, which picks up different aromas. Living entity, sukshmatapla. That's where we got it. Sukshmatapadadigyayam. What is that? Shantike. In the 13th chapter. Sukshmatat tadabhigyayam buddhastam chantike chitak. So we were discussing that the living entity is subtle. He has no connection with the material nature, but he picks up a connection by false ego. False ego means imagining that I have something to do with matter, that I can enjoy matter, that it's this combination of me and matter will be a very happy one. So he picks up some conceptions of life. If he's made his consciousness like that of a cat or dog, he's sure to change to a cat or dog's body. And if he's fixed his consciousness on godly qualities, he'll change into the form of a demigod. And if he's in Krishna consciousness, he'll be transferred to Krishna Loka in the spiritual world and will associate with Krishna. That's the idea.
The soul man who does anything is entangled. Can we use this analogy? I know you gave the analogy of a man getting his head chopped off.
Yeah.
But can we use this one also?
Yeah. Well, this is right. He has nothing to do with it, but he suddenly picks up these things. The air has nothing to do with these aromas, but it picks them up. Another analogy, if you want a third one, the moon moving on the water. The moon is not quivering, but when it's reflected on the water, it appears to quiver. Or another one, the moon shooting across the sky. Have you ever seen the moon shooting across the sky?
Because the clouds. Clouds are moving.
Clouds are moving, and when they're shooting across the sky like that, it looks like the moon is shooting across the sky. The moon has nothing to do with the clouds, but it seems to be associated with the clouds. We seem to be associated with matter. We imagine it. Shrotram chakshusparshanam cha rasanam pranam eva cha adhishtaya manaschayam vishayanu pasevate. This is the subtle science. You know, we talk about reincarnation, usually we just talk about the second chapter. But here in the 15th chapter, the subtle workings of transmigration from one body to the next are quite nicely described. How the living entity picks up a particular eye, ear, nose, sense of touch, according to the consciousness he's picked up. And why those senses? Because they're tuned to a particular set of sense objects. We see that practically. Sometimes we see that in this body, someone looks just like a pig. See people who look like pigs, you know, they're all, you know, in this life, you know, they're fat and always, you know, they'll eat anything and, you know, their whole mind is in their belly and they have no discrimination as to what they'll eat, when they'll eat it, and, you know, just... dirty, and they're, you know, it's like old plates of yesterday lying around. You know, they're pigs going to their apartment, and you see, it's like pig style. So they already have the consciousness of pigs. So then material nature says, you know, let's, you know, this body of yours doesn't fit very well. The next time we'll give you a body that's, you know, kind of more in tune with your consciousness. So he gets a pig's body. And he's happy with that, because that's now he gets to, you know, all day, and no one gives him a hard time about it. No one says, you're fat, you're eating too much. Okay. Ukramantam stitam vapi punjanam vagunanvitam. Did I skip one again? No. Yes.
Just a question in relation to this verse.
Yeah, sure.
Why is the mind like associated with consciousness?
Why is the mind associated with consciousness?
Yeah, it seems like it's got some relation with consciousness.
Well, everything has a relationship. Your hand and legs have relationship with consciousness also. Your consciousness says do this, and your hand does it. Your eye has a connection with consciousness. You're conscious of seeing or hearing something because of the eyes and ears. But the mind is the center of the senses. So it's getting all the input through there. Mind is not conscious, but the mind is used by consciousness. Intelligence also is not consciousness. It's used by consciousness. Yeah.
The mind is matter?
Yes.
Subterranean?
Bhumirapanalo vayukam mano buddhire. Mano and buddhi. Mind and intelligence. They're also subtle matter.
Does a spiritual mind accept and rejects as well? Does it have the same function?
Yes, spiritual mind accepts Krishna and rejects his mind. You're in this big room now, and you're a big boy, so we want to hear that big voice.
And the body dies.
Yes, he does.
So the ego, the soul, it stays as it was.
When the body dies, this is an interesting question. What happens to the mind and intelligence and the ego when the body dies?
How does he know, which conception he has?
Yeah, very good question. The answer is that when we die, we leave behind the gross body, but the subtle body we keep.
All of it?
All of it. The whole mess. Mind, intelligence, and ego. But of course, they're fit to the next body. But you keep your ego, your sense, false sense of being matter. You keep intelligence. You keep mind. But of course, they adapt, or are forced to adapt to the new set of circumstances. But that's why it's described here. This is how he's carried to the next body. Because the mind, even though he's given up the body, so now you say, well, he's liberated. He doesn't have, you know, the body is finished. Now he's free from the body. He can go back to Godhead or, you know, whatever. But thing is, he's still got his subtle body. And the subtle body is saying, I wonder what's happening tonight downtown. The subtle body is still there with its desires, with its dualities, with its independent spirit, and so he has to take another gross body formed around the subtle body. Yeah. And when he's actually liberated, then he leaves behind the gross and subtle body.
This question is really nice. So what is the shape of the subtle body? The shape of the gross body?
It's subtle.
Yeah.
It's subtle.
It has no shape.
I don't know. It's too subtle for me. Yes.
So then, you know, you, when you leave your body, you have this mind, and you have your intelligence, also you go, and you get, you know, you get forced out of the body.
Yeah. And you get a new, even in this body, sometimes, you know, you get it on the side of the head, and you know, your machinery limits your consciousness. Doesn't mean your consciousness has, as it is, has been affected, but your input-output system is severely damaged. So, because consciousness has a link to matter, according to the material mind and senses, your choices are limited.
Yeah, because then you get put into the womb, and it's just a whole different, you forget.
Yeah.
I think what happened at birth is so painful.
Yeah, you lose everything.
Because you remember in the womb.
In the womb, a fortunate child remembers.
Mm-hmm.
But, and prays to Krishna, get me out of here.
Yeah.
But at the time of birth, we forget. These are the laws of nature.
Mm-hmm.
For those who like parapsychology, there are instances of people who remember. Prabhupada refers to that in Krishna book as jati smaran. Remembrance of one's previous birth. Jati smaran. Remembering previous
birth.
Yeah, it's not very useful. But it's interesting.
It's
useful for us. There's a professor at the University of Virginia who's studied many, 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 many cases like this. Children who spontaneously seem to remember a previous birth. Rarely they may speak, they may know a different language, or they may know customs of a different place, or they may have skills that, you know, are inexplicable.
Why?
Yeah, you know, how the child would know these things.
Mm-hmm.
And then remember the life of another person who had the same skills, or the same habits, or the same idiosyncrasies. And his more recently published cases are still have still another feature. And in some of the cases, the body of the person shows physical characteristics corresponding to those of the previous person. For example, let's say the person was shot. The child may have unusual birthmarks at places corresponding to the entry wound and exit wound caused by the bullet. More graphically, there are some children born with unusual birth defects, like rings around the legs, like constriction rings, you know?
Uh-huh.
And there are instances where a child remembers having been tied up and killed, tied by the legs, so that the marks on the body of the child correspond to the physical circumstances of the life of the person he apparently remembers. Very difficult cases to explain by normal theories. Interesting case.
There was a movie in the late 70s called Audrey Rose. And we were a group of people to this. It was about talking about how they put people in hypnosis.
Hypnosis is really poor, actually. There are cases where people under hypnosis also remember previous lives. But hypnosis cases are very unreliable. Because a main feature of hypnosis is responsiveness to suggestibility. So if the hypnotist deliberately or unintentionally gives cues, the person under hypnosis subconsciously may try to respond compliantly to those cues. So I'm coaching you to remember a previous life. You may remember a previous life. Whether or not you actually remember it, you'll try to pull together a previous life to satisfy the request. That's a feature of hypnosis. That's also a problem. It came out in the 80s, especially, I guess, 80s or 90s, of children who remember sexual molestation. Under hypnosis, they recall having been molested. And it turns out that such reports are terribly unreliable for the same reason. You know, like, suppose I'm the hypnotist. I'd like you to remember some time in your childhood. Maybe you're with your family. Something unusual happens, or I don't know. Could you remember anything? I remember taking a bath. Do you remember taking a bath? Is anyone with you? Is your mommy or your daddy with you? My daddy's with me. What is he doing? Oh, he's just with me. Is he touching you? You know, like that. So I'm supplying, by the way that I speak, by the way that I set off my words, by the words that I use, I'm supplying the suggestions of what the child will report. So that's a danger of hypnosis, or a pitfall of hypnosis, that a person under hypnosis may just put together, you know, things he's read and things, places he's been and people he knows, and put together a lovely past life for me. Cases of children who spontaneously remember past lives are much more interesting, because hypnosis is not involved. Child hasn't had a lifetime of reading to pull things together from. If he remembers the life of somebody, you know, 80 miles away, how did he do that? Where did he get the information? Did he read it in the newspaper, a five-year-old kid? So, much more interesting. And then cases where the child has skills, how did he acquire those skills? And the case where the child has physical birthmarks or birth defects, how did he get those? So those are much more interesting cases. There's an article about such things on my website. And therefore we won't go into them any further, because it's always interesting to talk about this spooky stuff. But it indicates that modern science has come in touch with evidence suggesting that this, what we're reading in Bhagavad Gita, is correct. We don't need to wait for their evidence, but it's interesting to see that they've also encountered these.
It's not in the textbooks yet. It's not in the textbooks.
No. But it is there. It is there. In reliable research. Utkramantam sthitam vapi bhunjanam bhagunanditam Vimudha nanupashanti pashanti gyana chakshusha. I think we've discussed this verse also. Gyana chakshusha, a person who has eyes of knowledge, can see how all this is happening. And bhunjana, vimudha, na anupashanti, the fools can't see. Because na anupashanti, they don't see through authority. They just see with their eyeballs. But anupashanti, those who see by hearing from authorities, they can see. Any questions about this? Excuse me? Loud, crying out loud, speak loud. Don't make me do this. That was text 10. Do you have a question about text 10?
Did we do 9?
I bet we did. Got to be on your toes, they go by fast in the afternoon. Okay. And now, yes?
So if there is no problem with the gross body, we can think in this way, what is the problem in the subtle?
Yeah, even in this life we know that sometimes the subtle body influences the gross body. Well, subtle body always influences the gross body. First I think about hitting you and then I hit you. That's the subtle body influencing the gross body. But in there's something called psychoneuroimmunology. Fancy, huh? Sounds good. What it means is that your mind affects the way you feel, or the way it affects your health. It's known, for example, we talked about this, that the mind, for example, can be linked to one's getting or one's contracting or overcoming cancer. That emotional factors have a lot to do with who gets cancer. I have had a cousin, that is to say, the husband of my cousin, his son committed suicide. And not long thereafter, the father contracted cancer. You know, guilt feelings and all of that. From which he expired. So it's quite well documented in the field of cancer research that emotional factors have a lot to do, or can have a lot to do, with one's getting cancer. Now, why should that be? Given that the mind is not physical. So how can this non-physical thing give you a disease? Even, let's look at hypnosis again. It's possible to cause physical symptoms by suggestion. A good, skilled, trained hypnotist, for example, could suggest to you that you'll have that you'll develop abrasions or warts on your hand, and you may subsequently develop such symptoms. Now why? Or that, you know, there was nothing abraded your hand, nothing scuffed you or caused a problem there, simply by suggestion. What is that? Just by suggesting. That means it's all in the mind. Just because you have in your mind, you know, I might suggest, for example, that there's, that you've been working very hard and your hands have just been in, you know, rubbing against some machine all day long, and those hands are just so tender, And that redness that develops when your hands are always, being scratched and scraped by something, that redness sometimes comes on your hands after a long time being scraped and scraped and scraped. Those hands just feel so much discomfort. And the surface of those hands, those symptoms of discomfort just naturally start to arise without our really wanting them, without our having much to do with them. That scraping and scraping just... And gradually, you know, if you're good at it, then the person will, you know, his hand will start to be red, and after some time, the symptoms of abrasion can develop. Now, nothing's touched his hands, just his mind. But the mind has a relationship with the mind means subtle body, has a relationship with the gross body. And psychoneuroimmunology says to me, how does this happen? Because they have everything, you know, in terms of mechanistic processes. And all right, this is material anyway. You know, what chemicals got released? How did this happen? How did it happen? But it does happen. You can produce physical symptoms just by mental suggestion. I'll tell you a story. There was a man who worked in the railway company, railway yard, you know, checking freight cars and stuff like that. And it was getting to be the end of the day, and he was inside of a car inspecting this refrigerator car. And it got to be 5 o'clock, and people were going home, and someone slammed the door, and, you know, and went back, you know, and left work. And here he was trapped inside the refrigerator car. And, you know, he banged and he, you know, yelled, but nobody answered. And some hours went by, and pretty soon he realized that he'd be spending all night in this refrigerated car, and therefore he was going to die. And so on the sand on the bottom of the car, he wrote a few, his last wishes or whatever it was. And they found him the next morning in the car, and he'd frozen to death. Only thing was, the car wasn't plugged in. Excuse me? Yeah, it's a true story. At least I believe it was true. It was told to me by someone who told me it was true.
Mm-hmm. They also prescribe for like cancer patients comedy.
Yeah, comedy and visualization. I'd like you to visualize those little red cells just playing happily, like they're in a playground. Those red cells are so happy, and when they see those white cells, they just drive them away, or whatever it is that, you know, cells are supposed to do to one another. And by visualizing that, they get positive results. This stuff was considered very weird and was, you know, kind of out there, but it's been so well demonstrated in its effects that it's been accepted by, you know, big mainline hospitals now. It's pretty well standard treatment. You know, you go to Walter Reed Hospital, you know, the big military place where the president goes and he has a nosebleed or something. And they're doing these things. Because the mind has a relationship with the body. I mean, that's common sense. That's like not really astonishing. But here in Bhagavad Gita, it's taken to a still, to the, from a level of things that we can see and that we can understand, even though they're a little weird. You know, warts coming where there's no, just by suggestion, and people developing physical symptoms just by suggestion. Well, that's strange, but it's understandable. So we can understand also that these things described in Bhagavad Gita, the body is like a disease, it's just one big symptom. And we change from one body to another by the power of the mind. Yes? But could somebody find out what they're calling me about?
And it suggests that people are suffering with some kind of body, so they're in health problems. So with what kind of body do you get?
That's a special subtle body. The body is seen in hell. Oh, is the phone over there? Right. Bodies in hell are a special kind of subtle body.
Excuse
me?
The door was
locked. The door was, oh yeah. It's a special kind of subtle body. It's not the usual subtle body. It's an extra subtle body in which he's subjected to whatever it is that it might be. Because the gross body wouldn't be able to stand those things. But in the subtle body, that special subtle body is possible. That's described in the fifth canon. Okay? Yes?
The three gunas, they are influenced the mind.
Three gunas are?
The three gunas.
Yes.
They are influenced.
Yeah, they influence the mind. Of course they do.
And then it's coming to the gross
body. Well, the body itself comes from the mind. According to the mind, you get your body. So according to the modes of nature that infect the mind, in a particular body infected a certain way. Okay?
If last year there was some devotees that were about the ashram in Los Angeles from New Orleans, and on the way back they got an accident, and one of the devotees was killed. He's from here, actually, Bingo. He had nothing wrong. It's not that he had any broken bones or no bruises. And it's just like an accident. I don't know, the mind may have just...
Well, it's hard to say.
It's hard to say, you know. There was nothing...
Bodies don't take well to being banged around.
Yeah.
So, whether it's the mind...
Right.
A lot of things can knock the body out of... You know, knock us out of our body. But yeah, the person is like scared out of his wits, you know, scared to death. People can literally die. Fear.
Mm-hmm. How do we train our mind to always think about Krishna? Because we have so many verses.
You want something extra? You
have an extra.
Follow the process.
Chant
Hare Krishna. I have nothing new, you know. This is it. You chant Hare Krishna, hear about Krishna, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, associate with devotees, worship the deity. Live in a place like Mayapur, Vrindavan. Is that all right? It's work. Hear about Krishna, always be engaged in Krishna's service, talking about Krishna. It's cultivation. With enthusiasm, patience, determination. Is that okay? Great. I mean, this is like what we want to do. We want to think of Krishna. That's the first thing. Do we want to think about Krishna? Or would, you know, it's kind of like, yeah, we're supposed to, like, we're supposed to think about Krishna, or we want to think about Krishna? You know, if we want to think about Krishna, then we have every opportunity. Yes.
Can you say that these verses Actually, they are describing what he said in the 7th verse about the living entity, how he fights with the material nature.
Yeah, this is all part of the struggle for existence, taking one body, going to the next body. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yatanto yoginas chayanam pashyanti atman yavastitam yatanto pyakritat mano nainam pashyanti chetasa. The yogis who are endeavoring yatanta pashyanti, they can understand this. They can see how this is all going on. Atmanyavastitam, they're self-situated. Yatanto pyakritatmano, but those who are not self-realized, even though they try, nainam pashyanti chetasa, they can't see it. They can't understand what's happening. In the present day, there are many so-called yogis, many so-called associations of yogis, but they're blind in the matter of self-realization. They're simply addicted to some sort of gymnastic exercise and are satisfied if the body is well-built and healthy. They're called yatantyo prakritatmano. Even though they're endeavoring in a so-called yoga system, they're not self-realized. So they can't understand what's going on. But a person engaged in pure devotional service can see. Yes?
The people in goodness, how far are they into self-realization?
Excuse me?
People in goodness, are they also in self-realization?
They're at least going in the right direction. They should be. The Brahmins are supposed to be in the mode of goodness, and they're supposed to be self-realized. But to what extent? According to their... But generally, Brahmin means they have some idea.
They're just accepting the importance of self-realization.
They're engaged in the process of knowledge. Generally, those in the mode of goodness should be advancing in spiritual knowledge. Satvat sanjayate gyan. From the mode of goodness, knowledge should develop. Yes? Excuse me?
Maybe one can say that then there is no need of authority, you just need to be more prudent, and then you will develop knowledge.
But the trouble is that that knowledge will be, it's conducive to knowledge. But it's not that you just automatically develop all knowledge just by being in the mode of goodness. First of all, to be in the mode of goodness requires some guidance. That itself. And then just that you're in the mode of goodness doesn't mean, just like you're in school and you're living like a scholar, but that doesn't mean that you'll automatically develop knowledge. Just because you're in a scholarly, you know, peaceful, quiet, and just because you're in a library, it doesn't mean that you're going to get book knowledge. You need to be guided, you know, how to use the catalog, how to find the books, how to... You know, what to make of all this. It requires some guidance, not just that because the mode is conducive. Just like, oh, people go to some particular place because it's conducive to good health. But they don't necessarily get good health there. They need also some guidance how to, you know, they go to some health resort. So everything there is conducive for good health, but they need some guidance also. Don't eat this, eat that, follow this routine. And then because they're in the right environment and they're getting good guidance, they'll develop good health. If Krishna desires.
Both are needed.
Yeah. You need the right environment, the right situation, the right atmosphere, and you need guidance. Or just very good fortune. Maybe someone by very good fortune becomes self-realized. But, you know, you feel like someone by very good fortune becomes a Nobel Prize winner without attending college. But that's not usual.
Because then I understood that under one of goodness, you know, one develops knowledge that, of course, he has a teacher.
Yes.
And continuing, you know, a lot of devotees coming not from goodness.
But they come to goodness. What's your question?
About how like devotees have become, you know, made a lot of progress.
Yeah, because they come to the trance by chanting Hare Krishna under proper guidance. Even though the background is not very good, but by chanting under proper direction, hearing, they make progress. That means the process works.
And they come to goodness and then...
Yeah, they quickly.
Quickly. You said the yogis are trying to endeavor to look at Atman, means Atman. Mm-hmm. But then at the bottom is the Achetasa, means?
Those who aren't very intelligent.
Means their consciousness is polluted?
Whose minds are undeveloped. Achetasa. Those who are not Krishna conscious, who are not properly trained. They don't know how to, you know, everything. You can endeavor, but if you just endeavor, it doesn't produce results. Just like you want to learn archery, for example. It's not just endeavor, it's proper guidance. Endeavor needs guidance. And yogina, those who are transcendentalists, who are who got some connection with Krishna or with the transcendental process, they can see. Otherwise, just speculators, what can they see? You know, they have this theory and this idea and that idea. So they don't, you know. But the yogis, those who are following the actual yoga system or the process of transcendental realization, they'll get it. Follow the right process and you'll go somewhere. Just try to follow any old process and you may go in the wrong direction or you may go nowhere. Is that okay? Yeah? Shall we move on? Okay, we've covered that section discussing the subtle movements of the living being from one body to the next. Now we're going to hear something more about the glories of the Lord. Yada dityagatam tejo jagat pasyate kilam yach chandramasi yach chadno tat tejo vidimamakam. Adityagatam tejo, the splendor of the sun comes from Krishna. Jagat pasyate kilam, the sun illuminates the whole world. Yat chandramasi yat chadno, and the splendor of the fire and of the moon, that also comes from me. Again, we're several times in Bhagavad Gita seeing the connection between natural beauty, natural splendor, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You asked earlier, how can we think of Krishna? So Krishna is giving you some hints. When you see how beautiful the sun is, when you see how pleasing the moon is, when you see the splendor of fire, then you can think of Krishna. How nice, you see how nice the moon is. Everyone will say the moon is so beautiful. You know, the full moon is so beautiful. Oh, see the moon. The moon is only one tiny, 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 tiny manifestation of Krishna's splendor, Krishna's beauty. So how beautiful Krishna is, if the moon is so beautiful. How powerful Krishna is, if fire is only part of his power. And fire, you know, there's fire in your fireplace, there's fire, forest fires, there, you know, there's serious fire. How powerful Krishna is. Okay? And Prabhupada says, people, all these things are there. Sunlight's due to the, with the rise of the sun, the activities of human beings are set up. They set fire to prepare their foodstuffs. They set fire to start the factories, and so on. So many things are done with the help of fire. Therefore, sunrise, fire, moonlight are so pleasing to the living entities. Without their help, no living entity can live. So if one can understand that these are emanating from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, then one's Krishna consciousness begins. Well, these are some of the thoughts Prabhupada said to provoke Krishna consciousness in the conditioned souls. Very nice way of presenting Krishna consciousness. Krishna makes it very attractive. Okay? Gama Visha Chabhutani Dharyam Ahamojasa. Pushnami Choshiti Sarva Somo Bhutvara Satmaka. Krishna enters the planets and by his energy they stay in orbit. Yatchakshuresha Savita Sakala Grahana Raja Samasta Sudamurtius Vachesha Deja Dharyami. And it's by his energy. He's sustaining all the planets. The so-called force of gravity is actually Krishna's energy. And Pushnami Chaushadhi Sarva Somo Bhutva Rasatmaka. I become the moon and supply the juice of life to all the vegetables. It's by the moon's influence that the vegetables become delicious. I think farmers, they plant according to the phases of the moon. The moon has an effect. That's weird, isn't it? That there's just a planet out there that has an effect on. But that's, again, Krishna and his arrangement.
Loki,
yes.
Yeah, Loki. The retention of water is so much in nature. So according to the doctors, they say if you eat Loki when the full moon is there, so he says you sleep like a small baby.
Oh.
If you get that shark during the full moon.
Oh.
So by nature,
there are all sorts of, the moon has an effect on all sorts of things.
And on the mind, though, just the mind.
The mind.
It's the predominant eating.
The mind, the tides, the vegetables, women.
Mother.
Yeah, that's karma.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's also there. Aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva Praninam Dehamashutaha Pranapana Samayukta Pacham Yanyam Chaturvitha this was also weird in the previous edition. I'm the fire of digestion in the bodies of all living entities, and I join with the air of life, outgoing and incoming, to digest the four kinds of foodstuffs. Previous edition said, and I am the air of life, outgoing and incoming, by which I digest the four kinds of foodstuffs. Pretty good, you know, you're the air of digestion. Samayukta. Samayukta means joined. Keeping in balance, actually. So, Vaishvanara means the fire of digestion, which is taken to be representative of the Supreme Lord. Vaishvanara fire. And Ayurveda, it's understood that this, when the fire is going nicely, then you can digest. When the fire is bad, mandagni. When the fire is dull, slow, then your digestion is sluggish. If you eat when there's no fire, you'll have indigestion. If you have a strong fire of digestion, you can eat digest anything. So Vaishvanara is that fire of digestion. And it does need air. Without air, fire doesn't do very well. Anyone who's ever worked with building fires, you know that the air is crucial. Therefore, in Ayurveda, it's recommended that you should eat to half of your hunger. And then, suppose you could eat a kilo, and then you should eat half a kilo, and 1/4 kilo should be for water, and the other quarter has to be for air. Otherwise, without air, there'll be indigestion. So that's right, Prabhupada mentions here, Ayurveda. So this is all going on by, you can't even eat and digest without Krishna. We claim to be independent. But without the fire of digestion, you can't do anything. And that fire represents Krishna. Yes. Gravity.
Yes. How we could present the scientists.
How we can present?
To the scientists.
What do the scientists, ask the scientists, why should there be gravity? What's the final reason why there's gravity? What do they say?
And that's so.
They have some idea that because things are spinning in a certain way, or a planet is exerting an influence on another planet.
It's heavy, because that's what it's here, and it pulls it that way.
But why should it?
Is it
not
considered
energy? Ultimately, the... Huh?
Magnetism?
Is the Earth made of, metal? Whatever the reason, I'm not a scientist either, but they'll have some explanation. But then the real question is, why? Like we say that positive and negative attracts. If you have a negative pole and a positive pole, they'll attract one, right? That's electrical. Well, but the question is why? They'll say, because of the electrons and protons. But then our question again is why? Like a kid, you keep saying why? And finally, the answer is, why? Because why is a crooked letter?
Why?
Huh? Because why is a crooked letter? But, why should there be laws of nature? Whatever the scientists say the laws of nature are, gravity is due to this, that. But why are there laws of nature? It's like, why is there a law of the state? It's because somebody's enforcing the law. Without enforcement, there'd be no law. You can have a law that says, you know, no speeding, but unless you have cops, you have no law. Just posting a sign doesn't do it. You have to have someone enforcing the law. Then you have a law. Right? So why are there laws of nature? They just decided to exist. There's, okay, everything came from evolution. Why are there, you know, laws of evolution? Why are there laws by which matter is able to organize itself in such a wonderful way? That's their theory. Where do those initial laws come from? You know, everything developed according to the laws of nature. But where do those laws of nature come from? This is expressed in an article by Sariputta Prabhu as boundary conditions and initial information. In other words, a system has certain information built into it, or it has information that's coming from outside it, one or the other. So if you want to have a very simple system, so this simple system developed in a complex way, fine, then it had to have information coming from outside. Now the question is, where did that outside information come from? Or if you say this system was able to develop because it was very complex, it had all this wonderful information built into it, fine, where did that come from? Either way. Either you have to have a very complex system, so it's able to do all these things, or you have a very simple system, but it's able to do all these things because somebody helps it. There's outside information supplied. In either case, where did this all come from? Well, we discussed the other day that without the light of the sun, the moon, or electricity, your eyes are useless. So here's the learning experience. Krishna, Krishna, Hari, Hari. Hari Ram. Any questions? Yes. That will become evident at the end of the chapter. Why it's called Purushottam Yoga. It's called the Yoga of the Supreme Person, because the Sanskrit is Purushottam Yoga. Purusha Uttama, the highest person, transcendental person, supreme person. By the end of the chapter, you'll know why it has that title. Okay, where are we? We're quarter up. Okay. Excuse me?
Four kinds of foodstuffs.
Oh, four kinds of foodstuffs. Annam Chaturvidham. That's mentioned in our Gurvastakam. Chaturvidha Shri Bhagavat Prasad. Food that's licked, food that's chewed, food that's swallowed, food that's drunk, right? Yeah. There's charvya.
Sugar cane.
Yeah. Okay. So there are four kinds of food, which is there. This is analysis. Some kind of food is drunk, some kind of food is chewed, some kind is sucked.
Yeah.
What's the fourth?
And drunk.
Drunk, sucked, chewed, and
licked.
Huh?
Chewed.
Like that, there's four.
Licked.
Yeah. I don't remember the Sanskrit for these, so I'm a little. Vishwanath has it, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Makes life easy. Vishwanath Chakravarti?
Yeah.
So he's the authority.
Yeah.
Okay, here it is. Chewed. Savored by the tongue without using the teeth. Like soup. Licked, lehim, like raw sugar. And sucked, like sugar cane. Okay. The next verse is, somebody did a count and said this was the verse from Bhagavad Gita that Prabhupada had quoted the most often. Sarvasya cha aham priti sannivishto tasmitir gyanam apohanam cha vedaistra sarvair aham eva vedyo vedantakrit vedavid eva chaham. Usually Prabhupada quotes one or two lines of this or that verse. This one Prabhupada quotes each of the lines under different circumstances to make different points. The very interesting verse that way. Prabhupada quotes each line under different circumstances. So, let's see. Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto. I'm situated in everyone's heart. That's the first point. Isra sarvabhutanam hridye sirjanatishtiti. We've read that earlier, right?
Yeah.
Isra sarvabhutana, Krishna is in everyone's heart. So here it said, sannivishta, I'm situated in the heart of all living beings. And matasmitir gyanam apohanam cha. It's from Krishna that knowledge develops and forgetfulness and memory. They all come from Krishna. It's not just by our own power. But Krishna's within the heart. He gives knowledge. He gives forgetfulness. Prabhupada say anything particular about that? Yeah. We forget, and then in the next life, Krishna reminds us, he wanted to do this, he wanted to do that. Remembrance and forgetfulness.
So we think we're just...
It's not just independent. Mm-hmm. Just like who was at Karna, when he needed to remember the mantra, he couldn't remember it.
Mm-hmm.
We have that, you know, things that we normally remember, we forget. Things that we forget, we suddenly remember.
A typical problem is that you may know something better, but when it's to access them in completion.
Yeah, you may not get them. Everything finally depends on Krishna. And Vedaistra Sarvaya Rahameva Vedya. Vedya means that which is to be known. By all the Vedas, Krishna says, I'm the one to be known. All the Vedas are meant for understanding Krishna. Vasudeva Paraveda. Vedanta Krit Veda Vid Eva Chaham. Krishna says, I'm the author of the Vedas, and I know the Vedas as they are. One time we were at a university, Temple University in Philadelphia, and there was some problem with did an engagement there. And there was some Swami who was teaching a course in Vedanta at that university. So one of the students who attended Prabhupada's program asked the question, what about Vedanta? And Prabhupada asked him, what do you mean by Vedanta? What is the meaning of Vedanta? What does the word mean? And the boy couldn't answer. Although he was studying Vedanta, he didn't even know what the word meant. But Prabhupada said Veda means knowledge. And Anta means the last word, the conclusion. What is that conclusion of knowledge? Of course, they had the idea of something impersonal, something. And Prabhupada said that Vedanta means Krishna. Vedaisha Sarvaira Hameva, all the Vedas, it's Krishna that we're supposed to understand. Krishna is the author of the Vedas, as Dvaipayana Vyas, he's the compiler of the Vedas. And who can know the Vedas better than Krishna? So it's a very important point that all the Vedic, Prabhupada therefore quotes these lines in many different circumstances. People are studying Vedanta, people are studying the Vedas, but the goal of the Vedas is Krishna. Yes. What do we have?
Yeah,
he gives you that also.
We don't have anything?
Huh?
We don't do anything? We're not independent at all?
Sorry. You have a little tiny independence that you can turn toward Krishna or away from Krishna. That you have. That's up to you to misuse it or use it properly. What do you want? More? That's it. You don't have much independence. Yes.
So there's that, like when you're young and you start getting interested in some sport or some hobby or some whatever it is, you're being forced.
Yeah, Maya's dictating. Now get into it. We think it's our independence, but you're the wheels of fate are moving, the wheels of material nature are turning. Yes.
What about the spiritual world now?
What about it?
Because of the relationship, Krishna doesn't make everything happen.
Can't hear you.
Because of the relationship there, so it's different, you know?
No. Krishna makes everything happen there also. But it's in love. Just like in a relationship, you can have a relationship with the prison authorities and they make everything happen. Or you have a relationship with someone you love and they make everything happen. In any case, it's not, you're not independent. But the circumstances are very different. Or to give an example that Prabhupada gives, the kitten in the mouth of the cat is in one set of one circumstance, and the rat is in another circumstance. They're both in the jaws of the cat, but in very different, it's a very different experience. The kitten is experiencing protection and love. The rat is experiencing death.
In our tenth marriage, we can say that we have no free will also.
You say what you want, but we do have free will, but it's tiny.
But I mean, yeah, I mean, we cannot say, okay, Krishna, I don't want you anymore, okay, but he doesn't create a circumstance that, you know, we can stay away from him forever, you know, which is favorable for us, you know what I mean?
No, I don't know what you mean.
Which is, you know, like, if, okay, so we have...
you don't have the free will by which you can call the shots.
That's right.
You can't say, I want the choices to be this, 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 or this. All you can do is work with the choices that you have available.
Krishna
deals the cards. Now what you want and how you want to play them is up to you. You have that much independence, but you can't say, well, no, I want to not only play the cards, but deal the cards. Krishna gives you a situation, now it's up to you how to respond. No, I respond by wanting to redo the situation and call the shots myself. No, you can't do that. You know, I want to be in charge of the environment so that I can have unlimited free choice. No, you can't do that. That's what everyone is trying to do. You know, I don't like the choices I have, so I'm going to change things so that I have unlimited choices. Well, sorry. It's going to, you know, the rubber band effect is going to take place. It's going to bounce back and hit you in the nose. That's what we want. We want unlimited choice. That I don't want to choose between, you know, going on vacation and spending my money or staying home and earning money. I want to go on vacation and earn money. Well, you know, sorry, it doesn't work like that. Either you stay home and earn or you go out and spend. Some of you say, no, we'll get around, I'll go on a working vacation. But, you know, it's limited. That is just a crude example. You can't defeat material nature. That comes down to it. Yes?
So you can say in the material world, the material nature is put in a different direction. And Krishna, you know, and we want these directions for Krishna in vain.
Say it again?
You're saying in the material world, the material nature is putting us in different directions.
Putting us into
different directions.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and we want, and you know, and we think we're disappointing, so we want it, and Krishna is ready.
Yeah.
Right. So the spiritual world. Can you explain?
Spiritual world, everything is by happy cooperation. Here it's by exploitation. In other words, just like a prisoner. Here we're prisoners. We're just dictated to by material nature. And in the spiritual world, there's love. There's still not independence. You know, like a child who's put in a concentration camp. He's not independent. And the child who's with his mother and father in a happy home. He's not independent. Yeah, the whole atmosphere is different.
But in love, but if you have love, you have to have free will.
That's right. The child who's in his happy home has a little bit of free will. If he likes, he can run away. But he doesn't want to run away because he has a happy home. His mother and father love him. They give him everything nice. They care for him. He cares for them. So he has independence, but he uses it by being a part of the happy family. And a rebellious child, you know, stomps out and goes and, you know, becomes a heroin addict or something. So he thought he'd get independence, and instead all he got was, you know, misery. So they both have independence. But the child who's happily at home uses his independence that way, by a happy, cooperative relationship. The citizen who cooperates with the government has independence. He actually has more independence. Why? He follows the law. Because he follows the laws, he has more independence than the person who says, why should I be under these laws? I'm going to do what I want. Paradoxically, the person who agrees to follow the law has more freedom than the person who says, the hell with the law, I'm going to do what I want. It seems the person who says, well, the hell with these laws, has now more independence because he can do whatever in the world he wants. But he winds up being less independent. And the person who seems to be in a position of restriction actually has more independence. Yes. Are you confused again? Yes. What's the question?
When he's an incarnation and he's full of knowledge of Vedas, why is he unhappy?
Yeah. He's empowered, he's a jiva. He's not Vishnu.
Yeah.
Even Vishnu, he has his pastimes. He's unhappy and then but Vyasadeva is empowered by Krishna. He was unhappy because he hadn't glorified Krishna.
He was supposed to have
him. Yeah. Yes.
It seems that the material world is created in such a way that, you know, it forces us actually to go towards Krishna.
Well, it's meant to encourage you, but you don't, you know, people are damn stubborn. They manage to go on for millions of lifetimes avoiding what seems to be the natural thing to do. It's, you know, the only smart thing to do, the only intelligent thing to do. And people resist it for, you know, billions of lives. That's why I said, yutanto api akritatmana, those who are not self-realized, even though they try to get everything straight, they blow it. But those who are properly guided by a bona fide spiritual master, by the Vedic knowledge, they can see things as they are. Okay? You can make me work overtime, I'm going to charge you extra. Okay, so we'll meet again Monday morning and we'll continue the chapter then. Thank you all very much.